Good morning. Today is Monday, July 22nd, 2024. I'm going to be reading the Monday edition of the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. The main headline is the national headline about election 2024 titled Out of the Race, Biden Backs VP. There are a number of articles regarding this, so I just wanted to highlight that as the major headline, but I'm going to discuss the local news first before I read those articles about that national news. The main article on the front page under that header is a local one called She is Loyal to a Vault, V-A-U-L-T. The ink on Millie Johnson's high school diploma had barely dried when she received a call from Gifford State Bank. They wanted her to come work for them. It was 1951. Johnson would marry her high school sweetheart, Glenn Corky Roseman, the following year. Now, 91 years old, Millie Roseman found a career at the bank in a town she loves, working there for 46 years and serving since 1996 on its board of directors. Her board service comes at an end this month as she retires as board secretary. The bank will hold a reception for her for past and current bank officials and employees. A reception open to the public was held when she was retired as an employee. Roseman said, I've been with the bank for 73 years. I started 3 days after graduation. Born and raised in Gifford, Roseman could walk the few blocks to the bank, which was not very big, she said. There were only three of us who worked at the bank. The building had an entryway, an office, and a work location. She continued, no bathroom, just three rooms. There was a jewelry store next door where the owner let them use the facilities. He was a brother to one of the stockholders of the bank. Roseman learned the duties of a bank employee from the ground up. When I started, I had to learn everything. I'd learned to be a teller, to do bookwork, and operate everything. As the years went by, you learn how to use the new equipment. Roseman rose to the role of loan officer and executive vice president. Those early bank customers would not recognize the place today. It has modernized and greatly expanded. She estimates it's expanded three or four times and is the anchor of Gifford's downtown. Roseman's most vivid memory was a 1961 burglary when thieves broke in during the wee hours of the morning by gouging out a hole in the wall. When the culprits breached the vault door, it set off tear gas. The tear gas odor lingered in the bank for days, irritating everyone's eyes. Still, they got away with bonds and broke into people's lockboxes. She cannot remember if they were ever caught. Roseman said she did enjoy her job. It's interesting work. The satisfaction of dealing with people is what she liked the most. You know everybody in town. And it was the place to bank in that area. In an effort to expand the bank's customer base, Roseman obtained a list of everyone with an account with the Village Water Department. The effort produced a surprising result. Everybody but one person in Gifford already banked with us, Roseman said. It was truly like a hometown bank. She attributes the bank's success to just serving the people and being good bankers. Roseman bought the Linden Banquet Center, the former Chanute Air Force Base Officers Club, 20 years ago, and it has remained a favorite meeting place in the community. She continues to operate the business and makes the meals. We cooked for 420 people the weekend before last at two parties, she said. It's a good business. Roseman has found a buyer for the Linden and will retire at the end of the year. They will keep it running the same as it is, she said. Bank President Tony McLean said Roseman will retain the title of Director Emeritus in her retirement and is welcome to sit in on any bank board meetings that she likes. The main thing that Millie has always provided our bank is her knowledge of our customer base, McLean said. Many of our customers are grandkids of our original customers here. She's been a very stable sounding bar for me when I have questions about potential customers or current customers. She's like that encyclopedia of family names. Her and Jean Schmidt, a board member, hired me back in 1999 and gave me tremendous support as I got started here. They really continued to think of what's best for the bank and had a heart for it as well as for the community. Roseman said among the biggest decisions made while she served on the board were building the present bank and hiring McLean. That was a big project, she said, of building the new facility, and noted McLean's doing an excellent job. The bank also operates branches in St. Joseph, Potomac, and Thomasboro. Roseman is not one to sit around. I always worry about what she'll do to keep busy when she retires. I've worked my whole life. I quit golfing 4 or 5 years ago, enjoyed it for a long time, and I probably bowled for 60 years. Her civic involvements have been too numerous to mention. A resident of Rantoul's Indian Hills subdivision, she was on that association's board for about 30 years. Roseman was a director on the Country Health Nursing Home Board and served as president of the Nursing Home Auxiliary. Her husband, who passed away in 2001 in a traffic accident, operated a mechanic shop and owned storage units in Rantoul. Roseman and her husband had plans to build a house in Indian Hills in 2001 before he passed away. She waited 5 years before building that house. I built the house that we thought we were going to build together, she said. She has 5 children, Dr. Rodney Roseman of Kentucky, Jeffrey Roseman, Vicki Wilson, and Laura Hatfield, all of Rantoul, and Connie Roseman of Nashville. She has 9 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. In the Top of the Morning article by Joey Wright, he highlights a local restaurant. Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery in Champaign has adjusted well to new ownership since Lauren and Jeffrey Brokish took over the operation in February. The farm's operation, which now includes a full-service restaurant and ticketed dinners on Wednesdays, in addition to its array of cheese and dairy products, has remained consistent. We started the transition process last August, Lauren Brokish said, doing a lot of training and coursework and starting to work with the farm. We did not want it to be an abrupt transition. That it's been a smooth transition is clearly evident in how the farm staff performed at the 2024 American Cheese Society completion. The best indication of that is how well our team performed. It's the same cheesemaking team that's been there for the last 5 years, and the fact that we had our best performance in the farm's history speaks to how successful that transition was. Cheese and other products are available for purchase whenever the farm-to-table restaurant is open for regular customer service from Thursday to Sunday. It's just counter service, very casual, Lauren Brokish said. If people notice our higher-end stuff on Wednesday, do not be intimidated because our weekday menu is really chill. It's like a cheese flight, a charcuterie board. We've got some really great sandwiches and salads. The execution and the quality of the products is exactly the same. We're buying everything local and producing it ourselves. We just want people to enjoy the space. In the obituaries listed today is Christopher D. London, 12 years of age, of Danville, died Friday, July 19th. Arrangements are incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home. Sandra Reynolds, 79, of Rantoul, passed away Sunday, June 9th. A celebration of life will be held at First United Methodist Church in Rantoul on July 26th at 11 a.m., There will be a greeting of friends and colleagues 1 hour prior. A private family graveside burial of the ashes will be held at a different date. Services are being handled by Lux Memorial Chapel in Rantoul. In lieu of flowers, the family encourages that memorials for Sandra Reynolds be made to the First United Methodist Church in Rantoul in her name or to the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana. Rebecca S. Allen, Becky, 64 years of age, of Champaign, died Wednesday, July 17th. Arrangements are incomplete at Rosenbaum Funeral in Gibson City. Jeffrey A. Lee, 36, of Danville, died Friday, July 19th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home in Danville. Jane Shirley, 86, of Champaign, died Friday, July 19th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Owens Funeral Home in Champaign. An article from Vermilion Advantage titled "Danville Officials Hopeful for Federal Funding for Site of Former Quaker Oats." Last month, Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said local officials have been working with U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth to include $1 million for the city in an appropriations bill for help with the former Quaker Oats site for potential redevelopment. Vermilion Advantage President and CEO Mike Marin on Friday shared an update before the Step Up Community Group about continuing to respond to the Quaker Oats situation. Basically, what we're doing is putting a plan in place to try to either market that property as is, which looks less and less likely all the time given the news in the last week, or to put a plan in place to revamp that property and basically redevelop it. Findings made public recently by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration showed salmonella contamination possibly extending for years at the former Quaker Oats plant in Danville. Marin said there's been interest in the building, but the salmonella issue is going to be a major problem. So we are in contact with PepsiCo trying to figure out exactly the status of that building and whether or not it is salvageable. If the building is not reusable, local officials are putting pressure on PepsiCo to do what's right by the community. Marin said it's going to be a long-term process to try to attract something big for redevelopment of the site, but federal funding news could come this fall. Some good news that's happened on that front. We applied for some congressionally directed spending through Senator Tammy Duckworth's office. The city made the first cut for $1 million appropriation to do flood remediation along East Voorhees Street, which would affect the Quaker Oats property and adjacent Heatcraft property and other areas, Marin reported. That issue would have to be handled before that property would be able to be redeveloped, he said. The next funding step hopefully would include Danville in the next appropriations bill that will be in front of the Appropriations Committee in the budget process in Washington, D.C. in September. Hopefully we get included in the federal budget. That would be a huge first step to getting that property redeveloped and prepped for being able to be marketed to another major employer that we could bring into the community. Danville Community Development Administrator Logan Kronk has said while the building's fate remains up to PepsiCo, the city's main concern is water mitigation on the Quaker property and those contiguous to it. During every major rain event the city of Danville has on East Voorhees Street, there's a large accumulation of water. That water can be seen on the current Quaker site, the Heatcraft site, and the Dawson Logistics site. The city has to be prepared for how to get that property redeveloped, and that could include the city-owned prior Heatcraft site with the Quaker site. What does that look like, and how do we get it out of the floodplain? So that's what the city of Danville is investigating right now. Now I'll read some of the articles about the national news. The first one is titled "Legacy: Far-reaching accomplishments that did not translate into political support." This is out of Washington. Sitting in the Oval Office behind the iconic Resolute desk in 2022, an animated President Joe Biden described the challenge of leading a psychologically traumatized nation. The United States had endured a life-altering pandemic. There was a jarring burst of inflation and now global conflict with Russia invading Ukraine, as well as the persistent threat to democracy he felt Donald Trump posed. How could Biden possibly heal that collective trauma? He said emphatically in an interview with the Associated Press, "Be confident, because I am confident." But in the ensuing 2 years, the confidence Biden hoped to instill steadily waned. When the 81-year-old Democratic president showed his age in a disastrous debate against Trump in June, he lost the benefit of the doubt and on Sunday withdrew as his party's nominee. In the aftermath of the debate, Democrats who had been united in their resolve to prevent another Trump term suddenly fractured, and Republicans, beset by chaos in Congress and the former president's criminal conviction, improbably coalesced in defiant unity. Biden never figured out how to inspire the world's most powerful country to believe in itself, let alone in him. He lost the confidence of supporters in the 90-minute debate with Trump, even if pride initially prompted him to override the fears of lawmakers, party elders, and donors who were nudging him to drop out. Then Trump survived an assassination attempt in Pennsylvania and, as if on cue, pumped his fist in strength. Biden, while campaigning in Las Vegas, tested positive for the coronavirus on Wednesday and retreated to his Delaware beach house to recover. The events of the last 3 weeks led to an exit Biden never wanted, but Democrats felt it was essential to maximize their chance of winning in November. Biden seems to have badly misread the breadth of his support. While many Democrats had deep admiration for the president personally, they did not have the same affection for him politically. Douglas Brinkley, a historian at Rice University, said Biden arrived as a reprieve for a nation exhausted by Trump and the pandemic. This is a quote. "He was a perfect person for that moment," said Brinkley, noting that Biden proved an era of polarization, that bipartisan lawmaking was still possible. Yet voters viewed him as a placeholder, and he could never transcend the text of his speeches to visually embody the spirit of the nation with a sense of verve, energy, and optimism. As his reelection campaign entered its final days, Biden was still trying to prove himself and rally voters around fears that Trump would doom American democracy. There was never a Joe Biden Democrat like there was a Reagan Republican. He did not have adoring movement-style followers as did Barack Obama or John F. Kennedy. He was not a generational candidate like Bill Clinton. The only barrier-breaking dimension to his election was the fact that he was the oldest person ever elected president. While he contemplated being in the Oval Office repeatedly from his perch as a senator from Delaware, voters rejected him again and again. His first run for the White House in the 1988 cycle ended with self-inflicted wounds stemming from plagiarism, and he didn't make it to the first nominating contest. When he ran in 2008, he dropped out after the Iowa caucuses, where he won less than 1% of the vote. In 2016, Obama counseled him not to run, even though he was Obama's vice president. A Biden victory in 2020 seemed implausible when he finished fourth in Iowa and fifth in New Hampshire before a dramatic rebound in South Carolina. He won the nomination and then did something rare in American politics. He defeated an incumbent president, Trump, who had been a catalyst for a seething sense of polarization. He then had to withstand the January 6, 2021 assault on the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters, who falsely claimed the 2020 election had been stolen. David Axelrod, a former senior advisor to Obama, said history would treat Biden kinder than voters had, not just because of his legislative achievements, but because he defeated Trump. His legacy is significant. Beyond all his many accomplishments, said Axelrod, he will always be the man who stepped up and defeated a president who placed himself above our democracy. That alone is a historic accomplishment. And again, I'll note that that article was from out of Washington from the Associated Press. There is an insert with President Biden's letter that I will read, titled "My Fellow Americans." Over the past 3.5 years, we have made great progress as a nation. Today, America has the strongest economy in the world. We have made historic investments in rebuilding our nation, in lowering prescription drug costs for seniors, and in expanding affordable health care to a record number of Americans. We have provided critically needed care to 1 million veterans exposed to toxic substances, passed the first gun safety law in 30 years, appointed the first African-American woman to the Supreme Court, and passed the most important climate legislation in the history of the world. America has never been more positioned to lead than we are today. I know none of this could have been done without you, the American people. Together, we overcame a once-in-a-century pandemic and the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. We have protected and preserved our democracy, and we have revitalized and strengthened our alliances all around the world. It has been the greatest honor of my life to serve as your president, and while it has been my intention to seek re-election, I believe it is in the best interest of my party and the country For me to stand down and to focus solely on fulfilling my duties as president for the remainder of my term. I will speak to the nation later this week in more detail about my decision. For now, let me express my deepest gratitude to all those who have worked so hard to see me reelected. I want to thank Vice President Kamala Harris for being an extraordinary partner in all this work, and let me express my heartfelt appreciation to the American people for the faith and trust you have placed in me. I believe today what I always have, that there is nothing America cannot do when we do it together. We just have to remember, we are the United States of America. Another article from Washington from the Associated Press is titled, Endorsed by Biden, Harris Could Become First Woman, Second Black Person to be President. She has already broken barriers, and now Kamala Harris could shatter several more after President Joe Biden abruptly ended his reelection bid and endorsed her. Biden announced Sunday that he was stepping aside after a disastrous debate performance catalyzed fears that the 81-year-old was too frail for a second term. Harris is the first woman, black person, or person of South Asian descent to serve as vice president. If she becomes the Democratic nominee and defeats Republican candidate Donald Trump in November, she would be the first woman to serve as president. Biden said Sunday that choosing Harris as his running mate was the best decision I have made and endorsed her as his successor. Democrats, it's time to come together and beat Trump, he wrote on X, the social media platform formerly known as Twitter. Let's do this. Harris described Biden's decision to step aside as a selfless and patriotic act, saying he was putting the American people and our country above everything else. I am honored to have the president's endorsement, and my intention is to earn and win this nomination, Harris said. Over the past year, I have traveled across the country talking with Americans about the clear choice in this momentous election. Prominent Democrats followed President Biden's lead by swiftly coalescing around Vice President Harris on Sunday. However, her nomination is not a foregone conclusion, and there have been suggestions that the party should hold a lightning-fast mini-primary to consider other candidates before its convention in Chicago next month. A recent poll from the APNORC Center for Public Affairs Research found that about 6 in 10 Democrats believe Harris would do a good job in the top slot. About 2 in 10 Americans do not believe she would, and another 2 in 10 say they don't know enough to say. The poll showed that about 4 in 10 U.S. adults have a favorable opinion of Vice President Harris, whose name is pronounced Kamala, while about half have an unfavorable opinion. A former prosecutor and U.S. Senator from California, Vice President Harris's own bid for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination imploded before a single primary vote was cast. She later became Biden's running mate, but she struggled to find her footing after taking office as vice president. Assigned to work on issues involving migration from Central America, she was repeatedly blamed by Republicans for problems with illegal border crossings. However, Harris found more prominence as the White House's most outspoken advocate for abortion rights after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. She has also played a key role in reaching out to young people and voters of color. In addition, Harris's steady performance after Biden's debate debacle solidified her standing among Democrats in recent weeks. Even before Biden's endorsement, Vice President Harris was widely viewed as the favorite to replace him on the ticket. With her foreign policy experience and national name recognition, she has a head start over potential challengers, including California Governor Gavin Newsom, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. A short article titled, Reaction, Democrats Hail Biden's Decision, Republicans Urge Him to Resign. Democratic lawmakers hailed President Joe Biden's historic decision on Sunday not to seek re-election, praising him as putting his country and his party before himself. Republicans called on him to resign from office, saying that if he could not run for another term in office, that he is unable to serve as president. Biden's announcement came after more than 2 weeks of Democrats urging him to withdraw from the race. Nearly three dozen lawmakers had publicly called on him to end his reelection bid. Others had voiced concerns privately about what the ramifications would be for down-ballot Democrats if he remained in the race. When the president heeded those concerns, Democrats called it a selfless move. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said in a statement, "President Joe Biden has not only been a great president and a great legislative leader, he is a truly amazing human being. His decision, of course, was not easy, but he once again put his country, his party, and our future first." Republicans have seized on President Biden's poor debate performance last month to batter him as incapable of serving four more years. Now that he's out of the presidential election, many said he should resign his office too. If House Speaker Mike Johnson said in a statement, "If Joe Biden is not fit to run for president, he is not fit to serve as president. He must resign the office immediately. November 5th cannot arrive too soon." Tom Emmer, Republican of Minnesota, said, "If the Democratic Party has deemed Joe Biden unfit to run for re-election, he is certainly unfit to control our nuclear codes. President Biden must step down from office immediately." I'll end this half of the reading of the paper with two short articles before I go on with the next article about national election. Vietnam Communist Party Chief Nguyen Phu Trong, General Secretary of Vietnam's ruling Communist Party and the country's most powerful politician, has died following months of ill health, the official media said. He was 80. General Secretary of the Central Committee of the party, Mr. Trong, passed away July 19th due to old age and serious illness, according to the newspaper. Trong had dominated Vietnamese politics since 2011 when he was elected party chief. During his tenure, he worked to consolidate the Communist Party's power in Vietnam's single-party political system. In the decade before he took the top role in Vietnamese politics, the balance of power had shifted more toward the governmental wing led by then Prime Minister Tan Dung. In Key West, fans celebrated the birthday of Ernest Hemingway. This would have been his 125th birthday. He spent his 30s in Key West, Florida, and more than six decades after that, his fans, scholars, and relatives continue to congregate on the island city to celebrate the author's award-winning novels and adventure-filled life. This year's celebration concluded Sunday on the 125th anniversary of his birth. As a novelist, short story writer, and journalist, Hemingway's spot in the pantheon of American literature is undeniable, and his legacy permeates the culture and character of Key West. After spending most of his 20s in Paris, Hemingway embraced the vastly different island lifestyle, according to Corey Convertito, a curator at Key West Museum of Art and History at the Custom House. "He does not come here to act like a recluse and just write," she said. "He's out at the bars all the time. He's fishing with people, interacting in boxing matches." Convertito pointed out that Hemingway was in his 30s for most of the time he lived in Key West, not the white-bearded Papa Hemingway most lookalike contestants emulate. A Farewell to Arms was finished shortly after he began visiting Key West, and that book's reception, along with his coverage of the Spanish Civil War in the late 30s, increased his fame. That completes the first half of reading the Monday paper. I'll continue with the second half. Thank you for listening.